Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's a podcast that's hosted by me, Kyle Schoenewell, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. I'm coming at you live from a hotel in Orlando, so I need a little bit of grace for my background. As you can see, I'm very pale-faced and a lot of white in the background here, but I promise this is the best I can literally do. It is. I'm in this little cubby. Kind of jammed in the corner. And that's also why I'm talking a little bit quieter. And give me a little bit of grace if you're watching this with my eye contact, because you're down here and my camera is up here. And so I'm going to be looking a lot down here. But anyways, that's what's going on with me. Robbie.
This is taking me back to my original podcasting days, which were for the first year, like exclusively from random hotels.
And pre-video, luckily for you.
Yeah. I do my podcasting spot for at least like a month out of 2020 was literally in a closet, and not like a big walk-in closet, like a closet that you can barely fit in. And
the best kind.
But everything else sounded terrible. I kind of wish that we had video during that era.
A lot of shirts hanging up in the background. I'm in
there
Orlando.
Be shirts in your closet.
I'm in Orlando. Yeah. Good. Hey, see, I'm not going to miss that reference. That is really good. That is really good. Proud of you. I'm in Orlando. See if I can do this. If I pick up this, oh shoot. If you can kind of see out the window here, do you know what's right there? Do you know what I'm looking at? Magic Kingdom, Disney World. Disney World.
No,
you can't see it, but it's right around this corner. That's how close I am.
But you're not at Disney.
No, I'm here for work, but my hotel is really close. So, yeah, here I am in this little cubby. How about you? Tell me something. We haven't talked like all week. Tell me anything about you.
I know. If people excuse you for your setting, they can excuse me if my brain is like three clicks lower on the speed option. It's been
like
crazy.
Vision with the gum in his brain. How about that?
Yeah,
how about that one?
True.
How about that?
Yeah, that is good. That actually feels very accurate. I had a crazy, a big hearing out of town, and so it was a lot of kind of all day, all night days, but we won, which was nice.
Look at you.
You know,
taking money from people.
Line,
proud
so
of you.
That was keeping money in one place or the other, right? That's the whole gig. But then I got back. And I did get a chance to last night, for really one of the first times, go to the South By event that Candace helped put on for Variety. And it was really cool. It was this like all these comedians, like it's an award show that's kind of aimed at the comedy ecosystem. So there are kind of lifetime awards, but then there's some like breakthrough awards, and they have certain folks come in to present and give talks. And it was cool first because Candace designed the whole thing, like the whole
set
and all of it. And like I've seen it on her computer for however long. And so that was cool because it was at the Moody Theater, like where they film ACL Live. So it was kind of a big deal.
Is that the one with the actual like Austin background painted kind of thing? Like, can you actually, the background of the theater has like kind of Austin City Limits type thing?
Yeah. Yeah, it should be.
Okay. All right. Just picking sure.
But it's, yeah.
Sorry, I mean, not like, all if of you've us ever, are pros with ACL, excuse me.
No, it's if you've ever seen like, if you've ever been on a, like a hotel TV and you saw someone playing like ACL live, it okay. was probably there. But then
again,
last
we
minute,
we need to come up with a name of the person we're talking to when I explain that. Remember, just keep that going. Reminder. So I can be like, oh, wait. Hey, for Jessica,
that's true.
Or for Tim, that's true. This is what ACL means. Keep going. Sorry.
But then last minute, what was nice is, well, nice for me, it was crazy for her, but Candace had to get drafted in as like the talent handler, like the coordinator. So she was the one that was ushering people on and off stage and like telling people where to go, and which it was kind of a fluid show. So I think she got home and was telling me like she had all of these like long, long conversations with all of these like pretty famous people. So it was kind of a,
yeah, she did.
Like she was hanging out with like Nick Kroll and John Leguizamo, Gene Smart, Brooke Shields. Crazy.
Did you meet any of them?
I did not. No.
That's so cool. Candace is so
it was,
cool. We all just want to be as cool as Candace at some point.
She was also so unfazed that I think someone had a conversation with her afterwards about like whether that's something she would want to do more of.
Oh, here we go.
Which is crazy. So
is this something she'd want to do more of?
I don't think it's something that she would seek out, but I think that given how much she's in the event space, like doing stuff like this for the film and TV industry.
With who knows? Great power.
With great some people are born to greatness and some have greatness thrust upon them in the middle of South by Southwest.
The only two things I want to share has nothing to do with any of that. I told you I'm staying here in Orlando, and two things. One, my dream world is I'm by myself, right? So I have to eat a lot of meals by myself. I am literally by every chain I've ever eaten at my whole life, Robbie. I have Tijuana Flats, Torchy's Tacos right here. I did Mod Pizza today, Chipotle, Panda Express, nice. Like everything that I normally just rotate or all walk.
It's apparently a thumbs up.
Oh, we got to turn that off. There's got to be some way to turn that off.
We were in the middle of our
interviewing Kirk Cousins.
With Kirk.
I saw it on the edit.
I did like this. What was it? Was it like a your thought hand. Bubble or something?
No, it was a thumbs up. You like held something like this and it did a thumbs up. Oh, there's got to nice. Be some way to turn this off, Riverside. There's got to be some way. I'll look into that in a little bit.
I wondered if Kirk noticed that.
I actually used what we were talking about as a clip on social media and I had to edit you out of it because I didn't want that thumbs up on the
That's on the crazy that there's not an option.
There's got to be.
To remove that in post.
It's got to be some new update. Yeah, I don't know. The second thing is I stumbled upon watching Birdman for the first time ever. And
oh, wow.
And yeah, I want to kill myself now. It was horrifically depressing. Why did no one tell me it was the most depressing movie of all time?
Didn't it win Best Picture?
It was up for Best Picture. I can't remember if it won, but I again watch it and I go, there's just something different with me emotionally, I guess, because I go, holy cow, what performances. Holy cow, this was a great movie. And it ruined my whole day. I'm sitting here talking to you now like I was depressed all day. Why does that have to be the ending of it? Okay, anyways, so that's
man. I mean,
so I went to eat Mod Pizza to make myself feel better.
Oh, there you go. It's such a like meta movie too, yeah. Because of the like the Batman stuff that there's a lot going on in that movie.
Very meta to what we do. I mean, there's Spider-Man and Iron Man actual shout outs. There's a Jeremy Renner shout out. It's kind of
wow.
Commenting on like the superhero blockbuster culture for sure. They literally say, get Jeremy Renner. Oh, he's an Avenger. We can't. And then he like sees a clip of Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark grossing $1 billion and he's real pissed about it.
Wow. I didn't remember that at all. That's really interesting.
I just watched it like 3 hours ago. So yeah.
Huh.
And then like the very, like very last scene before, you know, I won't ruin anything before like the crazy pivotal moment.
he sees like a flash of this weird stuff. And there's like a guy, and there's like a drum line from when he's running outside, and there's a hot dog costume or something. And then there's Spider-Man and Iron Man fighting a Transformer. It's like, it's not even meta. It's like very on the nose. Right. I mean, it's like,
well, I just mean because obvious. Of the, like, I just mean
yes,
because
yes,
of the,
for sure. The Batman yeah. stuff. Yeah.
But
it applies to him.
Like, I wonder what it, I actually think I read at one point that, that was supposed to be like, if they weren't going to get Michael Keaton, they had some fallback. I need to go back and do a deep.
Nope.
A deep
what
dive,
you read but. Was they had an alternate ending, and the alternate ending was going to be Johnny Depp from the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise. Same thing. Basically, they were looking for another actor as well who was like famous from a massive franchise and then couldn't revitalize their career. Essentially.
Interesting.
And so they were going to have an alternate ending where like the cycle just continues and it's Johnny Depp at a Broadway play sitting in the same chair. And that's, and they didn't do it that way, but okay. Anyways,
that's interesting.
That's on my mind too. So I watched two depressing movies, Wakanda Forever and, Birdman before this. So we're gonna be talking about Black Panther, Wakanda Forever as we continue our rewatch journey. Couple things to note really quickly. As you mentioned, yes, we did interview NFL quarterback Kirk Cousins during a very big week for him. And so that was really, really fun. We've gotten a ton of feedback online, obviously. Anytime you interview a starting quarterback in the NFL, right around free agency, it's going to get some clicks. But if you're just finding this podcast, oh, gosh, we'd love to have you along for the ride. We love talking about movies, specifically the Marvel stuff. But that interview and that discussion was really fun. Turned into more of a discussion for 45 minutes about all different movies, Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter and Star Wars and Marvel, the whole deal.
I hope that we're the only outlet that's gotten to discuss The Count of Monte Cristo.
That's got to be.
Kirk.
It's got to be. And Bridge of Spies.
Bridge of Spies.
And then we covered Dune Part 2 last week on Screensaver and on Friends from Work. And I bring that up only because that's blowing up the box office right now. It's taking off on like a Barbenheimer trajectory right now.
Man.
So it's already passed Dune Part 1 in the box office, the whole run, I mean. So it's definitely got that cultural thing going right now. So if you want to hear our thoughts on that, spoiler alert, we thought it was an awesome movie. Check that out.
Yeah.
This week is big because on Friends from Work Plus, we're continuing our X-Men journey with X2.
Oh, man.
The golden boy, maybe? X2? The golden child of the franchise? On Thursday, we're doing those every other week leading up to Deadpool. So that'll be fun. And then today, talking about Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Robbie, let's get into Black Panther, Wakanda Forever after I quickly tell people that we are excited to be partnering again with Nerd Riot, including this shirt that I'm wearing.
Nice.
Yes, we're back. We're back with our friends, back home where we need to be, with our friends at Nerd Riot. You're going to hear us talking about them a ton in the future. All I'll say for right now is you can always use our promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK, but also they've made some pretty cool Dune Part 2 stuff. So if you're into shirts like this, like Baby Groot Nirvana, you can check out some of their Dune Part 2 stuff right now. So nerdriot.shop, also be on the lookout for their cool new Deadpool stuff, Deadpool and Wolverine stuff. So we'll be talking about that a ton in the future. Check out our friends at Nerd Riot. Okay, Robbie. Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Do you want to start or do you want me to kick us off?
You know, I think I want you to kick us off. Okay. This is one that here's why I say that. We have not actually had a full discussion about this movie since it first came out. Since our reflections, but I feel like I've heard you make references to it just being a movie that you struggle with on some level when it comes to rewatchability. So I'm really curious to hear your thoughts having just rewatched it and to kind of like, if is that something that you were looking at specifically when you were coming to it this time?
Excellent question. I enjoyed it more this time than I did last time I made that reference. I had a really hard time when I was going through the entire MCU again, getting through this film, that middle time. That's what I think you're talking about. This was better this time. I'm going to kick us off with my thesis statement, and then we have a ton of serious things we can get into, but Michael Scott style, this is my headline. Headline of the movie reads... This is a really good movie. that I would like a lot more if they had removed Riri Williams from the story. Some people still know how business is done. No, I'm just kidding. we're going to get into the Chadwick stuff again. I think you're correct in that mostly I stand by a lot of my initial thoughts from this film. If you go back and listen to our initial reactions, like I don't have a vastly different experience today, except I just, to start us right here, I can't figure out why Riri Williams was included in the story. It over time has only gotten worse for me where I watch and go, I can't find a single reason why this happened other than maybe the studio putting pressure. I don't know that on Coogler to get her in there because of an upcoming show. I can't, from a storytelling perspective, understand why she's in it. And really, I know this is a hot take and some people love it, so I know I'm in the minority here. For me personally, I just can't get into really any of the scenes she's in. I don't know what it is. It really seriously detracts from the film for me. But don't freak out. I have a ton of positive notes too. I can show them right here on my on my screen. Ton of positive notes. That's just my headline though. Thoughts? Yeah.
Well, you know what's interesting is I actually felt like I had a better time with her character on this watch. But I think that
good for you. That's great.
Well, I think there may be a reason for that also. And this is something that like I always talk about how fascinating any rewatch of anything is, just because I think you realize how situational it is, not just in terms of what time of day and who you're watching it with, but also like I have been listening lately to the Black Panther podcast that came out around the release of this movie. And if people remember, it was Ta-Nehisi Coates interviewing kind of a variety of folks that had worked on the film. I would really recommend it if anyone's a fan of this or a fan of his. It's just a lot of really thoughtful conversations. But I had listened to the episode right before starting the movie today that was interviewing Dominique Thorne. And I do feel like hearing her talk about her experience and how she got into it the first time and her story with Marvel in general, I think I just was maybe, I came into it more interested in isolating her story within the movie and then kind of investing in that based on some of the background she gave on how she viewed the character. So I should say on the one hand, like I think maybe it's worth noting that if people do want to try to connect with that helped me some. But I also think it's fascinating to ask the question that like Candace asks about Christopher Nolan movies, which is...
Should you need to watch an interview with her to make it make sense?
Right. Like it at what point is that now just a flaw in the thing itself if we need this much outside extracurricular?
To be fair to my opinion, that was your original opinion, if I remember right. That was your idea the first time we watched that movie together.
We
watched that movie together in Atlanta, which is actually a really fun trip. That was a really fun trip. And we recorded this in a hotel. And that was your takeaway, is you were the one that brought up, like, I'm not sure I understand.
Oh, for sure. And I still think from a story level, it feels grafted on.
Basically, what they needed was some scientist to be the catalyst for Namor and Wakanda to be mad at each other. But there could have been there could have been one of 20 different options that didn't involve her to get them to do the same result, like to still escalate the circumstances or whatever.
Yeah, I do like... I think choosing to make her someone that's young and vulnerable in that way and likable in that way, like, I think that is important to create the conflict at the heart of the whole movie about whether or not they should be killing whoever the scientist is. Like, I think that would be harder if the scientist were just like someone random
D-bag.
Yeah, like like, you know, it's, or even just a person, like even if it were like Tony Stark or something, like it, yeah, that would just be a weird vibe.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be that though. It doesn't even have to be a scientist. It could have been a lot of things.
Yeah, something
about it, like the humor doesn't really work with me, and so like they're, maybe I'm not the target demographic for it, but like the jokes almost like it changes the tone of certain scenes in a degree that I don't like. So even when like it makes sense story-wise, I don't even love the execution of like what it's bringing to the film. And I think about that last fight where it's just like, there's something about it that feels so weird to me, to have like these ultimate warriors fighting with like sticks and spears. Mm-hmm. And then this like hyper like Dragon Ball Z looking suit flying around,
right,
the whole time. It just feels like it's like out of place. Like it literally is out of place to me.
So I actually, not that I want to start here with the negatives, but I don't have a ton of negatives, so I feel okay leading that way. That is one thing I have not really changed my mind on.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this in the first episode, but yeah, something about the water battle just looks so weird to me.
Coogler like, and has not such even a from good a, like, grasp on so many things, but he doesn't yeah, get the final battle stuff.
Well, especially that, like, again, I am much more into the one-on-one stuff.
Yes, between 100%.
Even in the Talon, like whenever he, you know, he's getting all the moisture sucked out or whatever. Yes. Like I think that's
a
great.
That's great on the beach.
Like he does the one-on-one stuff well. Like he can do that.
Yep.
But yeah, it's like,
and then like occasionally you get these shots that are super zoomed out, and those work okay for me. Like when it's all CGI, but way from a distance. But it's these like mid-level shots where you see the boat and the people fighting on it, and it looks weird and fake and doesn't feel it doesn't feel tangible or epic, or you're not nervous about it.
No, that's exactly, tangible is the right word, I think. It is this weird, like, and it's not that that's only Coogler movies. I actually feel like there are a couple moments in Ragnarok that have felt that way to me. Like every now and then it's the ones where it's like, there's just a lot built out around it. And when there's nothing really to ground it, which is why I think the tangible word is correct. Like when you have some kind of like, even if it's just like a concrete part of a building, you know, like it like there's something there that seems like it's the actual thing that everything else can be like rooted around. But whenever it's just like blue in the background, silver boat, it looks a little like X-Men 2000.
Totally.
To me.
And not only just the look, I think it's also, I mean, there are headcanon things you can do to explain the lack of the epic proportions of it. But one thing I think is so strange always is that, you know, we're told, I'm not making this a joke, but we're told that Wakanda is always so advanced, like such a military might, like superior power. And then in this movie, Namor's like, just wait till you see my army. Like you cannot stand. And then it somehow always kind of feels like it boils down to like 50 people versus 50 people. And I'm kind of like, where is like the military might? Now I get it. Like Namor doesn't have his whole army because he kind of gets surprise attack. Like that's not him coming back, but still it's like when he first chooses to attack, he attacks with like 30 people. And I get it. Like it just, Infinity War is the movie that does it well, right? That's Wakanda where I actually see like, oh, they have a whole army and like you see this massive sprawling city and then they only have 16 troops and like 15 people wearing yellow suits. It's very strange to me that they can't seem to get the epic proportions right. And maybe he wants to, you know, keep it zoned in onto one 1v1. But I still think then like give me a shot of like the whole nation battling and then cuts the beach or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something's not right about it, the whole thing.
No, that's right. And I get that he's kind of in a hard spot because of Infinity War, where it's like he's now had two big, like on the Great Mound fights that look, I mean, Infinity War does it much better, but it's like, so he had to change it up somehow, and obviously it makes sense to do the water thing with...
Well, maybe don't do it. Maybe it's 1v1, and that's it.
That's a good point.
I'm saying you could have done a different route. It doesn't have to escalate She-Hulk style to a final battle then if you can't top the Infinity War one, in my opinion.
Yeah, but although, I mean, that's the interesting thing. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think that maybe that's what we're going to finally get now. I was thinking about how this movie ends with Shuri as the Black Panther and not as the Queen. And that's kind of the first for us here. So I wonder if the next movie we're actually going to get a Black Panther or the next appearance of her that is kind of out in the world, not as tethered to the nation of Wakanda and therefore not always moving with like the Wakandan military and state behind it. Like obviously she still will be the representative and protector of Wakanda. But I think that it's kind of an interesting move to now separate those out because they've just played with the idea of the royal obligations and protecting the nation and like the different ways of approaching royalty. So like they've explored that really well across Civil War, the first Black Panther, and then this one. So maybe that's like my point being, maybe the end of the next one will be something that makes more sense to be like a 1v1 that doesn't involve some kind of like army level
showdown
battle.
Well, that's literally two of my only three flaws that I could find. The Riri stuff just doesn't ever work for me, like ever. The final battle just doesn't work for me. Something about the final battle is off. Mm-hmm. And then the only other thing I'll say, and this is not anyone's fault, is you just feel the lack of Chadwick. Like, it's a Black Panther movie without, like, this anchor character. And there's nothing they could do about it. And Ryan Coogler has been very vocal about how this movie had to get entirely changed. Like, the whole thing got screwed up, obviously. This was not the plan originally. And you're watching it, and there's just so many times where I'm like, based off the comics you've told me about and stuff, I see Namor, and I'm like, oh, how cool would it have been to have, like, Black Panther, Chadwick, and Namor, them interacting, and, like, that relationship going forward and stuff. Like, there could have been so many amazing possibilities for this film. And there's so much I loved about it. But you just feel the lack. You just feel the lack. And it's no one's fault.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that there's such a charm and charisma to Chadwick that is just irreplaceable.
Mm-hmm.
Where I because of the specific thing that he brought to this, I think you're right. It is no one's fault because I think it has nothing to do with Letitia Wright's performance, which is incredible.
Which I'm actually going to highlight here.
There's no one that could replace like such a unique stamp he had put on it, which is why I think the way this movie goes about it is so smart and so effective by just leaning into the significance of the character and the person behind it. And so, but I totally agree. I mean, the nice thing is that Coogler recognizes that we will feel that way. And I think intentionally kind of emphasizes the shadow that's cast over the movie. Like there's a world where a filmmaker is afraid of that or tries to like compensate too much in the wrong ways. And I like that it's like what you and I talked about after Endgame, you know, we were trying to figure out what it would look like to have a Marvel universe post that and how we wanted that movie to feel like it had real impact. And, you know, I think both of us like that the first couple projects that we got after Endgame treated it like that, like that it was something that did cast a long shadow. So I think that that's way more so the case here just because of the real life element to it. And
yeah, and I didn't want it recasted, by the way. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that would have been such a missed opportunity to tell, like, it's such a, like, to me, and maybe that's a perfect way if that's your last big thing that you feel here on the downside, like, it also, to me, kind of transitions to one of my big takeaways from this movie that I enjoy or just really respect. Like I remember, I think Barry Jenkins, director of Moonlight, if Bill Street could talk. I remember when this movie first came out, him just talking about how it was something that he couldn't imagine, like how much has to go into pulling off a movie like this. Like there's not just because of the Chadwick stuff, but like that in the context of a superhero movie, in the context of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and the fact that you're having to juggle all of that stuff, whether or not it always manages to do all of it well, while also telling the story about this very real tragedy. Like it's a crazy thing that Coogler, I think, largely pulls off here.
Mm-hmm. Like I said earlier, if you're just finding this podcast, we like to pride ourselves on being the positive guys. So even though we started off today's episode with a few negatives, we generally like to try to find the positives and point those out to you if you were down on this movie, convince you why you maybe should give it another chance. And so we'll be right back with all positives after a quick word from these sponsors. All right, so I totally agree. I think Coogler largely pulls it off, and when you watch this film, you feel the scope of how much he's having to do. It's a long movie too, so mm-hmm. there are like distinct sections. One of my first notes, and I can't emphasize this enough, I feel like the first 19 minutes of this movie, maybe 17, I have a 7 and a 9, I can't tell which one I mean, 17 or 19 minutes, could not have been better. The start of this film is so spectacular. I'm gripped. Starting it off with a prayer and then losing Chadwick, then the funeral and how just epic that is. And I felt it. To have Shuri crying on the casket as it goes up is brutal to me. Like, that does get me. Then the intro credit roll of just Chadwick in silence is different and gets me. Then the UN court scene is amazing, where you get the dialogue from Queen Ramonda going over all this stuff. And really on this one now, it really sunk into me the actual thing they're arguing about. And I love it as a follow-up to the first Black Panther and the open borders, which we talked about. Like, the open borders has not gone like T'Challa thought it would go. And she's calling out the other nations, which is totally believable, in my opinion. And it's just a well-paced, excellent scene, well-acted. Then it goes right into a flash of the attack on the vibranium deposit. And that's so cool. It like the violence is a little more tangible. Like, they're stabbing spears into people. So you start feeling a little more than the first Black Panther. There's a little bit of humor in there with the knives, but mostly it's just a cool choreographed fight scene. And then into maybe my favorite sequence of the entire film, in the reveal of Namor and his people with the siren sound, like the creepiest start to have the troops. First of all, like, borderline horror movie type stuff when the divers, you know, like, are screaming and that you don't know what's taking them out. And, you know, the guy's looking through his binoculars at just like some floating things, but they don't know what it is. And then the siren sound from Ludwig Göransson is creepy. And the people just like zombie-esque jumping into the water. And then the attack on that one scientist girl on the helicopter. And then you just see the silhouette of Namor throwing the helicopter into the ground and it's playing his theme. From the beginning of the movie until that moment, I'm not sure they could have started the film any more spectacularly. Like, at that moment, I am like, this is one of the coolest attacks and villains. Like, I don't even know who this is. And it's so epic. And I'm so in. And it's so different from anything we've had in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yeah. The siren sound thing, too. Like, this, I was, oh gosh, the start of this movie, man, is really good.
It has such a cool, like, start of Winter Soldier feel to it.
Well, the ship,
in a way, that's something that I wish that if it were going to end with the kind of battle we got, I wish it felt more like that scene does.
Yeah,
because I agree. It's so, like, I remember watching it in the theater with you.
Yes.
And I actually feel this way for a lot of this movie. Like, we pointed out the shots that look weird, but so much of this movie, I'm like, man, this looks really good. Like, on a cinematography level, there's just some cool stuff going on here.
That's the moment where I'm grabbing your kneecap, you know, going, oh, this is like, right. Yes, this is what I wanted this movie to be. Like, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
Oh,
I
know
do
I gave
wonder,
you a lot there, but all those sequences work, not just the
No, I scene. Totally agree. I think I have a similar note here where I think even like 45-ish minutes in, I was still feeling like, and again, not saying that it ever really takes a downturn for me, but I think that there's a chunk of the movie that is pretty much flawless. One question I had for you, kind of talking, since we're talking about that scene which kicks off the kind of U.S. Intelligence interest in the Talokan mm-hmm. people. How did you feel, or how do you feel at this point, about Ross's storyline with Valentina?
By the way, on this watch, I was looking for it. They never name Namor's people, right? Like you said, Talokan people. They don't ever say.
I think
say,
it's something like. As I was listening to it on the, like when they're talking about it on the Black Panther podcast, they say something like that is similar to that, like Talokans something. I think that
they never say like Atlanteans. They don't say strictly Aztec. It says in subtitles, it says Aztec for all the subtitles when they're on land, obviously.
Right. I think it's essentially like whatever, like as Wakanda is to Wakandan, I think Talokan is to like Talo.
But it already ends in an N. I only say that just because, like, I remember on our last episode, we kind of avoided it because I was like, I can't remember what they're called. I don't want to be the one that missed it if we saw it early. But I was watching for it this time. I'm like, I don't think they ever name them.
There's definitely not made explicit, if so.
I'm okay with the Ross storyline.
I think I am too. I don't have any issues with it. But I do remember people saying that felt like it was a major, like... Like, it could have been cut out of the movie entirely with very little consequences.
Hold on. Like, what? No, because, like, no. I think the Riri stuff could be cut out. But, like, Namor specifically says you can't tell anyone outside of this, outside of Wakanda about us or I'll kill you. And yet it's believable to me that the rest of the world is going, who's doing these attacks? Like, if it's not Wakanda, who is it? That I buy the whole thing with that. And I buy having to then be like, hey, like if it's Wakanda, we don't want to attack them. Like, I don't know. I buy the whole thing.
I think the question is more like, does it like, cause I did the one thing I realized on this watch is that storyline never really resolves. Like if you think about it, it sets it up as though the movie is going to end with some kind of showdown involving U.S. intelligence.
Or I guess we're just led to believe that off camera, they were notified that it's a different people and we're okay. Yeah, you're right. They don't really follow up on what America then would say when they find out about Talokan.
Well, and like if they... Yeah, I mean, because the stuff that he's recorded or bugged saying, I don't think he ever references it because they don't tell him really anything when they first talk to him about the, or Ramonda, I don't think, because he's like, is this a new player or someone that we're already keeping tabs on or something? And she's like, that's all I can say right now.
Yeah,
so
but
they
he
may
also
still
doesn't
not know
who it is. Yeah, but then you would think U.S. would then be escalating it still. like
that's if, that. So the thing is, I like the Ross character and I like keeping the reason I think it was the right call is because what I think I was really looking forward to here was exploring the kind of ground level political implications of the decisions that were made in the first Black Panther film. Like you said, I like that we follow up there and I feel like having a character like Ross that's in the US and kind of able to show us how other people in the world are now perceiving Wakanda whenever we really haven't seen that, because mm-hmm. it's like in the first movie, no one knew. Mm-hmm. And then it was all chaos and catastrophe. And so it was the right instinct. It just makes me curious, like, what is on the cutting room floor, because it feels like that story should have had some kind of ending. And the only resolution is that he gets arrested and then broken out. But I feel like we should have gotten some kind of follow up with JLD's character.
Yeah.
And I don't know why we didn't. Like, I guess I just don't really understand what she ever, I guess maybe that's my question. What does she do in this movie other than just arrest Ross?
Well, to be fair to her, she's not like a massive part of this movie. She's probably only in it for like 6 minutes total.
Yeah. Well, but I guess I'm just wondering, like, why?
She's there to like investigate the first crime on the bridge, and that tied in with the attack on the Navy ship. They're trying to figure out how the United States is involved in this. And if they are finding vibranium elsewhere, that seems important, like on a national level. And then finds out that Ross is colluding, and so she arrests him. It's not like it's a huge part of the story.
No, I know, but I guess it's just I don't really understand why any of that happens. Like, it just doesn't feel like it has any, like, it just seems like a thing that's happening, like, over here.
Well, used as a device to escalate things between Wakanda and Talokan, you know? Like, if you didn't have it, why would they be so mad at each other?
I mean, but I guess I just don't know if her character contributes that much to that element. Like,
but she's such a minor part. That's such a weird thing to be hung up on. She's only in the movie for five minutes.
I'm not super hung up on it. I guess it's just like it doesn't feel like, you know, I always say that like the movies that we praise the most are the ones where it's like, man, this is crazy because this is doing this on this level and this thing on this level. And there are things in this movie that are like that. But this is just one that feels like it just doesn't fully fit. And it makes, like, I don't think I would feel that way as much if we got some kind of additional follow-up with that character. Like, even if it were like a post-credit scene.
Yeah. But, and you might still get some follow-up to the entire ramifications, even maybe from her in Thunderbolts or something like that. I mean, it could just be that, like, now America in general is like really aware of these other peoples. Wakanda is super powerful and Talokan is too. And maybe now they know it, but yeah, you don't get a lot of follow up here. It's just, I agree with you. Are we going to push this down to a tier 3 movie?
No, not for me. Cause the highs are so high. Like, the score is so epically good here.
You can't make it a tier 2 movie just based on the score.
And not just the score. I'm saying that we came in, you said you had 3 negatives. That's a tier 3 movie.
You're the one. Oh my gosh, I'm in a hotel. You're the one that brought up Ross and Val after I tried to not talk about any of that. You're doing me.
But I'm not saying it's a tier 3 movie. Look,
well, I'm asking, is that where this discussion's headed right now? Are we pushing it?
Here's
my point. You can understand how when I rewatched it, combined with it being emotionally heavy because of Chadwick, that it's not the easiest rewatch in the MCU. Do you agree?
For sure.
You can just pop it on for a lot of reasons.
I do think one thing that I mean, talking about it being a tier 3 movie, I don't think that it is at all. But I do think it's funny you say that. Because I remember when this movie first came out, I thought that it had a lot in common with Iron Man 2. And I still think that.
Yeah, it's not tier 3 is not horrible. Captain America the First Avenger, which you really love, is a tier 3 movie according to our joint rankings. I'm not going to get hung up on this. I'm just saying it would be towards the bottom, like, of those, right? This is not better than Thor Love and Thunder. It's not better than Black Widow.
Those
movies don't have like missing ends like this one does. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I also don't think like it's. I actually think this movie has a lot in common with Thor: Love and Thunder for me because it is the thing where the highs are so high. I think that, you know, the difference is, I would say,
for me, the highs are higher.
Is the right word, but.
For me,
I don't think that there are, I I don't think that there are any highs as this movie gives us in Black Widow. I think Black Widow is maybe more consistent in part because it's got a shorter runtime, and I think it's not juggling as much, but...
See, but I enjoy it significantly more for me. But it's just,
but it's also more of like a, what, it is a more fun. Sure.
Well,
like, but I guess the reason I say Iron Man 2 is actually like, I mean it as a positive because I do think that one of the complaints that, like, I think one of the things that has driven Iron Man 2 down, period, is more like it's a victim of its own circumstances, where I think in the context of the MCU, that movie, and the reason why whenever we go back and watch it, it's like, why does this movie get such a bad rap? I think it's because it got a bad rap at the time because it felt sure. like it was like introducing and juggling a lot of things that no one really cared about yet.
Okay.
But now, whenever we go back and watch it, it's like, oh man, this is the first time we'd seen Natasha.
You know, I'm an Iron Man 2 guy. You know that.
Well, and so to your point, I think that maybe once we do get follow up with the, like, if there are some implications here within the Thunderbolts kind of world and we get follow up there, I feel like I won't feel that as much. I think it's just that weird thing of being in a spot without, you know, we're now almost 2 years out from this movie releasing and we just haven't really gotten any look at the implications.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, that's a lot of people's concern about a lot of these projects in general. Like, we're desperate for a follow-up on Tiamat, you know, the statue right. in the ocean, you know. There's a million things like that. When this movie first came out, I said our initial reactions episode that it's probably not a better movie than the first one, but I like it more. And that's the one thing I think I'd change is it's not only not a better movie, I don't like it as much as the first movie. It hasn't aged as well for me. That being said, just because I promised this would happen, some really small things. I think that Shuri now, in hindsight, is a highlight in that the journey she goes on is pretty special. I think it's pretty cool to have her start off praying and following the customs and the rituals and the spiritual side of the entire thing and having faith, and then her brother dying, stripping that from her. And then to see this really jaded young person who doesn't, you know, she rejects all the funeral stuff. She claims she burned to the ground. Like, the first time I watched it, I think it was like, okay, that was well done. But remember, I talked about how maybe it needed to be emphasized even more.
Oh,
when you,
right.
When you rewatch it, you really pick up on it. It's pretty cool. To go the whole journey through that to the end where she does spare Namor's life and does see her mother for the first time instead of Killmonger. And when she says, show them who you are, finally doing that and taking the step to, like, go through the rituals and become the Black Panther ritualistically as well. And, you know what I mean? Like, to follow all that stuff and be, and, like, basically have her faith restored was pretty cool.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think what I loved so much about this journey for her is, like, the more I watch it, something that I think we talked about in the first episode, it gets, like, truer and truer, and I see more and more elements of it, and it's the way that in doing all of the other things that I think this movie does well, at its core, kind of aside from celebrating Chadwick's contribution, it gives us, like, a new starting point that captures a lot of development that we had already gotten from Chadwick's character. And so we get the same, like, in the same way that he sees T'Chaka die in front of him and can't do anything to stop it, she has the exact same experience with Ramonda, and then going through the process and having kind of this vengeance that's driving her, even the exact line, we get the call back to Civil War. But there are more and more things that I notice, like the like, even the final battle is kind of doing this. It's combining the ending of Civil War and the ending of Black Panther to create, like, I noticed listening to the podcast, they talk about how there's supposed to be a level of sadness there that I think gets through really through Tenoch's performance, which I feel like is...
Vengeance has consumed us.
Like, it's just, like, you see how... like whenever he's like, it didn't have to be like this. And then, which another one of my favorite sequences in the movie, like the reverse, like slow-mo of showing like,
is that supposed to be a metaphor? Okay. Yeah. Of like, yeah, this could have been avoided.
And like, if we like, yeah, if we had never started this, like all the people that would still be alive. And it's like, it reminded me of the end of Civil War when T'Challa's sitting there like watching Cap and Tony fight.
Oh, one of my favorite scenes in the entire MCU.
And realize it's the same, you know, kind of like emotional, like, oh my gosh, like what is happening?
Yep.
Like, why was this? Like if,
I'm done,
if we could just wind back
me.
The clock, you know?
The Namor stuff for me has only improved. I thought Namor slapped when it first came out. It slaps hard and I even remember.
Yeah.
Like him explaining the background with the coolest music from Ludwig in the whole movie. The like he does this Aztec sounding stuff during the whole explanation. But I wrote down the Yucatan stuff all slaps. It all slaps. The origin of his people, like the first time he levitates when he's a kid, and then the music that theme he has is so dope. It all makes sense to me. I love his line to Queen Ramonda when he gets real close to her face like this, you know, like stares at and goes, I'll kill you. You know, like that kind of stuff. Like I'm into the whole thing. And then the creativity of his people, like to visualize like the whales is so dope that they have to wear a mask of water. The water bombs, dude, are the coolest looking thing ever. Like I'm into
that's what I'm saying.
And I desperately want follow up on that. Like I want to see them as another player now.
I think that we will. And that's what like what makes me so excited now that we finally have a Fantastic Four cast is like I love the idea of him and Pedro as like rivals for Sue Storm. If we ever get to that point, which I think, you know, it would be, I think it would be handled.
I haven't even thought of that.
In such a great way. But it's like Vanessa Kirby, I think, would do, because she's such an excellent actress that I think the chemistry there would be really fun. But at the same time, like, I really, like, as much as I miss having T'Challa and wish so much that we could have gotten those characters interacting, I kind of love, like, to go back to what I was saying, the way that they just make all of this so, like, Shuri's story, I think, is really, really excellent. Like, you're right about the journey she goes through. But even just the, like, it's told with such subtlety, and the fact that it's also able to loop in all of these other themes from the Black Panther property so far, but even like we get not just to the movies, but like we get because of what she has lost and because of what Namor takes from her, I feel like we actually get something here that we couldn't have gotten with Chadwick's T'Challa. Because I think by the time, like if we had seen, like in the comics, those characters bring out each other's darkest sides, and that's where you see the, like, there's a real tragedy in that because they're both kind of these noble leaders that give in to these base instincts. But I feel like T'Challa was beyond that for us, to where, like, I wouldn't want to really see him regress to another, like, I'm after vengeance.
He is the
and
noble
so in
character.
Some ways... Yeah. Like, I kind of like that instead we got the chance to see her put through that crucible and weighing the same.
And by the way, angry Shuri is pretty dope.
Yeah.
That scene with Winston Duke at the end when he says, like, your mother wouldn't want this. And then she snaps on him. Well, my mother's not here and so are all of her dreams. So I don't really care. What I want, you're going to do it for me. I was kind of like, whoa, okay. Like, okay.
Especially because of, like, where she's... Like, it's so impressive how naturally it happens. Like, you can still, like, the progression from the character as we were first introduced to hear. Oh my gosh, which I have to say, the scene with the actual, like, funeral death, and then that scene, not the one that you're talking to or talking about afterwards, but the first scene in the woods with M'Baku and Shuri following Ramonda's death. That one, like, got me a little teary this time.
Yes. When he says, like, you've endured way more than any child should ever have to endure.
The world's, like, taken too much from you to still be considered a child. Yeah, yes. It's like, And part of that is Winston Duke's performance there.
He's great. Really powerful. He's great in this.
I love. I was actually thinking that I want to see more from him. I feel like he was in a couple of things in quick succession, and then I haven't heard from Winston Duke in a spell.
Yeah, I watched him in Us not too long ago. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's how I'll finish this up. Ready? Here we go. Rapid fire. What the heck with those yellow suit people? Joanna on our Discord, who keeps sharing that costume mashed up with Monsters, Inc., the people that are cleaning everything.
Oh, that's
it just seems like such a strange costume choice. The attack on Wakanda is incredible, I think.
Yeah.
And seeing Namor fly around. And yeah.
It feels like it's like straight out of a comic book in the way that I want it to be.
In the best of ways. The water bombs and like how the water starts trickling in, and that's how they know like, uh-oh, mm-hmm. we're under attack. Oh, the Killmonger cameo's nice, effective,
and
well-timed.
And so unforced.
Yeah, correct. Exactly my note. I told you the whales and the bombs and Talokan are all perfectly visualized. I even love the way I told you that in the first episode, he actually learned some of those lines underwater and recited them underwater so that it felt really authentic. Man. Again, contrast that to Aquaman, and it just feels so much more tangible here, in my opinion.
Right.
The pop music placement that they use during the reveal of Talokan might rival I'm Just a Girl as the worst needle drop in the MCU. I hate it so much. I hate it.
Okay, you know what's interesting about that is it is it's not actually a needle drop. So I was listening to the podcast with fair. I'm not gonna look, your opinion is your opinion. I cannot tell you it is wrong.
It's an original song for this?
So Ludwig wrote that as part of the score. Like he wrote that with...
See if Riverside will give me a thumbs down. Will it?
No, Riverside's too... No, you know Riverside's
too... Riverside's too mature for this.
That's fair. I like it. I feel like it kind of gives like the... It feels like kind of Zelda-esque to me in the best way. I don't know. I think, again, it's hard for me because I've read about the way he went. He collaborated with musicians from like that particular area and was using like trying to find. It's crazy the amount of depth he went into for the score. By the way, this is not me. This is me using that as a segue. This is not me making a case for that particular song. But I think that you would be fascinated digging into that because like he went and met with these like anthropologists and like these people that knew about like drawings of instruments that we don't actually have anymore and tried to reconstruct them and figure out what some of the music from these Mayan civilizations could have sounded like.
Crazy.
It's like, it's really cool the depth that like some of the sounds now, because like they play the samples on the podcast and stuff that like I just never thought about, like what instrument is this? But it's like this crazy stuff, like all these kind of like woodwind type instruments. So
I need to check it out.
Man, I'm so impressed with his, like how much he seems to kind of immerse himself in any given project that he works on. It's like
I've seen two other things like that with him in particular. I saw on that podcast that Songwriters Break Down Songs. What's it called? I'm blanking on the name. Golly, I love that podcast. Now I'm blanking on it. But he went through Killmonger's theme and it was really cool. And then I saw an actual video that my dad shared about him writing, I think it was the Mandalorian theme, but the same kind of thing, like how in depth he went behind the scenes. So yeah, absolutely. I just hate that one song, but the music in general is really good. And then I'll just say, in closing for me, the movie closes so spectacularly. I think it's genius to have that last shot be in Haiti by the fire and just the symbolism of Shuri finally being able to go through the rituals now of the burning his clothes, the burial clothes. And then just a great performance from her to have like the single tear right into the Lift Me Up by Rihanna is really effective. That's a very effective ending. Yes, it does. It really works.
Yeah. The bookends of the movie, like when you're looking at it in that, they're real. Even like the final scene in Talokan, whenever he's explaining why it was the right decision.
Yes.
I really love, like, what a great place to leave that character.
And it was, like, again, on that note, you just inspired me. It was such a bold decision to actually kill off Queen Ramonda, and I applaud them for doing it because that's a very moving death. One of the more moving ones we have in the MCU. And it's just devastating for Shuri, who has literally now lost everything. And this is a really low-key moment, but I actually get moved by the death of the Talokan woman too. That Nakia shoots her, and then Shuri wants to prevent it, which seems like such a rash thing by Nakia. Like, Nakia kind of gets out of this like scotch-free, but it's like, dude, if you would have given her a chance to heal that person, that's it might have not actually, you know, needed to escalate to that. But actually, when she says, can you heal me or whatever, and then Namor just looks at her and she dies, is actually really sad. That gets me too now.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm struck in general by how much that's the genius of this franchise. Like, the Black Panther movies so far have done such an excellent job of putting you in a position where at certain points you are kind of fully on the side of the quote unquote bad guys.
Right. Like, Namor technically doesn't strike first ever. He shows up and talks to them and breaks that rule and kind of intimidates them. But even that, he's like, no, I just want to talk to this scientist. and then he takes Princess Shuri and tells her he's going to do horrible things. But it's Wakanda that comes down and kills his people.
Right. Yeah. Like, and from his perspective, like, I like seeing it. That you're right. That scene is so important because you see that he's having a legitimate emotional reaction. Like, I like that it's not this, like, it's not like a Thor 1 thing where he's just like, all right, well, that's it. You know, I'm about to go off. Like, I like that it's,
he kind of takes responsibility for it. He goes in front of all his people and says, like, it was my fault for trusting her. Never again. It's very, I love that. Oh, I love it. Again, I want to see more of it. I want more of
it. I know. I'm really excited to, like, that is the thing that this movie, like, I think what's really wild to me, is just stepping back, and this is kind of my closing thought, and then anything you have left, but
that's it.
Like, what, for all the, like, nitty gritty things that we've talked about and things that, like, work to varying degrees, the three things that I think this movie does so well that like really make up for any other issues for me are the Shuri storyline that we've just talked about, the way it handles the passing of Chadwick, which we've talked about, and then just the entire introduction of
a new
Talokan and Namor, and like all of like the Ryan's decision to do the Mayan roots for that character, which was totally his, totally invented. Nothing in the comics there to draw from at all. Like, he
and
wanted
kind of
to
like
root
a weird,
it.
Believable way too.
Yeah. Well, and he, like, again, like, as I'm reading into it, he did insane amounts of homework. Like, they had like a specialist on set for all, like, every facet of like Mayan culture that we know about. And they tried to channel that to the point where they would like write a script and have things like storyboarded and then bring in scholars and say, like, is this actually what this would have looked like? Or is this representing like another culture that we're kind of like conflating by accident? And like, they made like actual significant changes to like costume and set pieces and stuff. Like,
and like the white men just bringing disease.
Right. I mean, and putting them in the same position as Wakanda or as like other Africans relative to Wakanda, like all of these other people in the Yucatan that are like colonized or like experienced genocide. And then you have this set apart group, and what would happen if it's like that version of Afrofuturism, which is something that they talk about a lot on the podcast. I think that, like, for how well done it is, like, it's so ambitious and it's executed just phenomenally well. You're right. Like, it looks so cool. when they're underwater as opposed to...
And his theme. Oh my gosh, his
music. Oh man, yeah. It's like... So yeah, those three things I just think are done so well and are so interesting. And what I can't wait to see is what if anything this means for like the way mutants will work and function in the MCU. Here we go. Because this is a perfect way to end, actually. One thing Ta-Nehisi said in one of those podcast episodes, and this is obviously not gospel, he's not within the MCU, but this was just kind of his commentary on it as a Marvel comics writer and a lifelong reader. He talked about how he grew up on X-Men and how, in part for him, for the longest time, he was drawn to X-Men because it was this book that seemed to really reflect like his own experience as a black man in America, and talking about like how, you know, X-Men has always kind of been an analog for that. Mm-hmm. But he talked about how it was always a little hard because a lot of the like star mutants were like blonde hair, blue eyed white guys. And so he was like, it always rang like a little bit hollow that these were like the stand-ins for discrimination. But he talks about how according to this movie, which is, I guess we had gotten Ms. Marvel before this, but the first major, at least film, like mutant reveal. His line that I loved so much was, in the world of Wakanda Forever, mutants aren't born, they're made. And I think that that's really interesting to think about, both like thematically, which we can explore more later because we don't have time, but also just as kind of like a cliffhanger. Like, based on what we know from this movie and from Ms. Marvel, like the only quote unquote mutants that we've been introduced to both had like kind of external stimuli that led to them being what they are in some capacity. Like for like here, it's the actual like vibranium liquid, and there it's the bangle. So I don't know, like I, because you and I have talked so much about like, how do you do that? How do you introduce so many mutants into a world that's kind of been known as each super person having a lot of significance? And maybe it is some kind of like middle ground that that then like roots it in like some kind of like not just experience, but often like traumatic experience that is also like deeply personal and cultural. Like, I'm just wondering if there's going to be a trend at all, or if these just happen to be projects that sort of approach it in a similar way.
Do you think Namor will grow his little winged feet back? I hope so, right? There's no way they're taking that out. Yeah, okay. It can just heal.
But
yeah. I mean, that'd be a huge bummer.
Because they've kind of talked about them having some level of like healing capabilities, right?
Oh, for sure. Not even talked about. They showed you like they get stabbed and then come back.
So yeah, so I'm sure it.
Perfect setup, because this Thursday on Friends From Work Plus, which is a subscription feed, $5 a month. If you want bonus episodes, we're going to be going through X2, as we mentioned, as we work up towards Deadpool. But then next week, Robbie and I anticipate hopefully seeing, cross your fingers, a few episodes of X-Men 97. That's right. It's already here. Yeah. Launching on Disney Plus on March 20th. And one edit for you and I already, Robbie, is that episode 1 and 2 are dropping on the first day. So it's not just one. So
right.
You have two episodes to start.
Right.
Maybe we'll see those. Maybe we won't. Either way, next week we're going to use that as a chance to what we're calling an X-Men primer. Like, let's just get you a little bit more in the mindset of this animated series, which is going to be a lot of me asking you questions because I know nothing of it and you're the expert in this and I've been going through it again. So that's next week.
Which I think it's going to be fun, because I have to imagine we have some listeners that will maybe be checking this series out that have not had the chance to go back and watch all of the originals. So I think it'll be fun to be able to talk about it through that lens, both ahead of time and once we're actually into the show.
Let's go. New Marvel content within the next 10 days. Hey, from me here in Orlando in my hotel at Disney World. Thank you for listening. Thanks for subscribing. And we'll see you right back here next time on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.